Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, Ryan Fertel is a Louisiana-based food writer and historian. He's a James Beard nominee. And he writes about and talks about the why the classic hog cook over wood coals restaurants are maybe disappearing from the scene. And he's written a wonderful book called The One True Barbecues, Fire, Smoke, and the Pitmasters Who Cook the Whole Hog. And he's here to talk to us about it here in Chapel Hill. And Ryan, welcome.
DG, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about the background of this book. I mean, we've got lots of barbecue and food books. Yours is a little bit different in focus, and tell us about it.
Yeah, so it is a barbecue book. It's a book about barbecue, but there's no recipes, not one recipe in the book. It's not a guidebook. It's a profile. It's a narrative and a profile of the men, the pit masters who cook the whole hog. Most of those, and I'm interested in restaurants, I should say. Of course, whole hog is cooked in backyards and tailgates all across the country, but I'm really interested in the restaurants who keep this tradition alive. And there, of course, many of them are located in North Carolina, eastern North Carolina. There's a couple that took me to South Carolina, and there's one or two left in West Tennessee. So I'm really interested in the lives of the men who keep this tradition alive, why they keep it alive, what they have to say about barbecue, and what they have to say about everything but barbecue. So the book kind of touches on a lot of things that we do and don't talk about in the South and as Southerners.
Is it a book about are they profiles of the pit masters, these guys who cook the whole hogs over real wood burning coals? Is that the focus of it?
Yes, sir. So it's a first person narrative. So it's about me traveling to find these pit masters. But it is the way the chapters build. It's profiles of about 10 pit masters in the Carolinas and Tennessee, and including one who now cooks in what I think is traditional whole hog in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to. I love the pattern of it, and I would just say it's a memoir of your traveling from place to place, talking to these people. It's not just a series of biographies. It's your experience as much as it is the pitmaster's experience. Am I right?
Yeah, I like to think of it as a memoir. I mean, whole hog, as you know, it involves time, a lot of empty time. So whole hog takes up to 18 to 20 hours to cook a pig. That's 150 to 200 pound pig over hardwood coals. And these pit masters have to stay up all night with the hog. They have to shovel full of coal every 15, 20, half hour. And so there's a lot of time for staring into the fire. And I was lucky enough to convince, or sometimes I had to beg, pit masters to let me sit with them next to the fire. And it's about talking next to the fire, something that was, I mean, the fire, we can think of the fire as the original kind of office water cooler, right? And it's a place, a space that leaves room for talking or not talking, considerations on all types of subjects, and of course talking about meat and barbecue and the work that these pitmasters were doing.
I wonder if you would talk to us about some of the characters in your book and some of the places. We're friends with John Sheldon Reed, who's written a great book. There are now two great books about barbecue, and he's kind of ornery about what is barbecue and what is not. And if it's not cooked over wood coals, he just says, you know, that can be good food, but it's not barbecue. But you take it one step further, because John Reed will let us eat shoulders or butts, mm-hmm. that have been, if they've been cooked over wood coals, and done slowly and done right, then that's fine barbecue. But you're focusing on something that's not readily available here in Chapel Hill, and that's whole hog. Got to go a little bit further east generally to get that.
Yeah, whole hog cooked over wood coals is rare, is becoming rare, but it's also right now we're in a moment where we're expanding. There's some new places that have just popped up around the country. I should say that I like to think of myself as open-minded about barbecue.
Oh, you are? Are you? Okay.
Liberal, perhaps. I accept anything anyone wants to call barbecue, I accept it as barbecue. So Texas brisket, I check it off as barbecue. Grilling anything, ribs, shoulders, just pieces of meat, steak in the backyard, you know, someone like John Shelton Reed and others might call that grilling, might insist on calling that grilling. If people want to call it barbecue, a barbecue pit, I accept it as barbecue. I accept barbecue as a verb.
Yeah, but your book is called The One True Barbecue.
Right. So,
so it could be barbecue.
Right, book titles. Right. Book titles have to make a stand. They have to be interesting. But whole hog barbecue is my one true barbecue. So I think of it as that.
Gotcha.
Well,
go ahead. But for instance, we have a famous barbecue close by, Allen and Sons, where Keith Allen gets up and he's a pit master. But it's not whole hog. It's good. But let's talk about, and there is a new restaurant called Picnic where we see a whole hog laid out, and it's kind of fun to be able to choose, you know, to direct to get something other than shoulders or butts. But I want you to talk about the skyline. I'm sorry I'm rambling, but I guess I want you, if you will, to talk about some of the places that you liked and visited and they're important that maybe people in Chapel Hill don't know as much about, like the Skylight Inn. And will you tell us about barbecue in Aden, North Carolina, and why you drove all the way from Louisiana to experience it?
Yeah, well, I do love Allen & Sons. I've been there. I haven't been to Picnic yet, but I will be very, very soon. I can't wait to go and meet Wyatt there. Maybe it's best. I want to talk about Skylight, but maybe it's best to talk about the first person who introduced me to whole hog barbecue, and that was a man named Ricky Parker. And he had a barbecue place not in the Carolinas, but in West Tennessee in a little town called Lexington, and Lexington is on the road that 412, the highway that used to connect Memphis and Nashville. It's about an hour, 2 hours east of Memphis.
So it runs. And, this road runs parallel to I-40 that connects Nashville and Memphis. If we stayed
absolutely,
on I-40,
the old agricultural highway. Now,
gotcha.
The kind of scenic drive highway now.
So it's about halfway between the two cities.
About halfway between, mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And Ricky Parker, when I met Ricky Parker, he was a man who I went there with the sole purpose of interviewing him for the Southern Foodways Alliance, an organization headquartered at the University of Mississippi, and I was doing freelance work for them as an oral historian, so just kind of documenting this place back in the summer of 2008. And I show up at Ricky Parker's place, which was called Scott's Barbecue at the time, because the founder of it was a man named Early Scott. And Ricky did not want to sit down for an interview. Not that he didn't want to talk to me. He just could not physically force himself to sit down. He worked constantly. He said, and I believe him, that he'd work 19, 20, 21-hour days, that he would only sleep 3 hours a night, and that the rest of the time was spent on his feet, working the pits, cooking whole hogs. And for a very, very small town that Lexington is, they sold a lot of hogs. They would sell dozens and dozens a week. And Ricky did a lot of the work himself. He had helpers, but he did a lot of the work himself. And that was shoveling the coals, building the fire, flipping the hogs. And he'd stay up all throughout the night. He'd like to say, he kind of had these catchphrases that he told all reporters. I wasn't the only one to to kind of interview and fall in love with Ricky and what he did, but he'd say things like, I'm more married to my pit than I am my wives and ex-wives. He'd say that he used to wear out 4 to 5 pairs of shoes a year because he was always on his feet. He said that he would never take a break to eat, that he only ate standing up. And in my many visits to Ricky, after I first met him in the summer of 2008, I'd go every year because I was just kind of enthralled with the man. I saw that all of this was true. He was obsessed. He was obsessive, and he was kind of a nut. He drove himself, I would say, and I think people who really knew him would agree, he drove himself too hard to cook whole hogs. He thought that he was the last man standing, that he was the last pitmaster to be doing this in the country, even though reporters would tell him that this was going on in the Carolinas. But in West Tennessee, where he was, he had seen this culture almost completely disappear. He had seen whole hog restaurants either switch over to doing shoulders or switch to to cooking their hogs on electric or gas-fueled pits, which was something that he wouldn't stand for. He said that if the health department or the county or whatever else ever forced him to switch to gas or electric rather than wooden fire, that he would quit, that he would shut down the business, that he would never cook again. And thankfully, that didn't happen.
So can we still go to Scott's Parker's restaurant and get whole hog barbecue?
Yes, it is now called it is now called Scott's Parker's Restaurant, and a funny kind of name, two possessive S's on the title, and it's now run by his two sons, his heirs, Zach and Matt Parker. They've taken over for their father, and so the book is kind of structured around Ricky and my. As Ricky is an obsessive, I kind of get obsessed with Ricky. I visit him over and over.
I tell you what,
and
let's talk. We want to talk some more about Ricky Parker and your experience with him and whole hog cooking in Tennessee. And we'll continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Brian Fertel, who has a new book called The One True Barbecue. And the subtitle is Fire, Smoke, and the Pitmasters Who Cook the Whole Hog. And when I interrupted you to take a break, Ryan, we were talking about Ricky Parker over in West Tennessee, which is I was going to ask you, why'd you get to North Carolina? And I think it's because you first visited Scott's Barbecue and met Ricky Parker. He got you headed in the right direction.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Ricky Parker kind of forced me to go further east and go to North Carolina. I joined up or signed up with the Southern Foodways Alliance again in the winter of 2011. They wanted me to go to North Carolina to document barbecue culture there, the diversity of restaurants around the state. Not just whole hog restaurants, but restaurants in barbecue restaurants in the West, in the Piedmont. And so for about a month in 2011, I drove my parents' RV, which I rechristened the barbecue bus, and I took along my best friend, Denny Colbert, who was a professional photographer. And we spent that month documenting barbecue, talking to pitmasters, taking thousands of photographs of food and the pitmasters at work. And I knew this barbecue. I knew whole hog was out there, of course. I'd been to North Carolina. I hadn't eaten whole hog barbecue in North Carolina. But it really opened up what whole hog barbecue was to me. I fell in love with a lot of different barbecue restaurants in the state. I love Piedmont style. But again, it was whole hog style that really... really attracted me. When I got to the town of Aden, you go to Aden, it's an extremely small town, a couple hundred people live there. It's a relatively it's an agricultural town that has certainly seen better days. There's shuttered storefronts. The men that live in the town, a lot of them retired farmers, talk about, how the tobacco industry used to be, how it's been replaced by soy and other things. But this town, this semi-depressed agricultural town, supports two whole hog restaurants. The Skylight Inn, which is very, very famous, maybe the most famous barbecue place in the country, and Bum's Restaurant. And it was so interesting that these places are related. They're family, they're cousins, and they can trace their history back well over a century. And I really find that so interesting.
Well, what, give us, share with us a little bit of the history. I'm interested in both places, but the Jones family at the Skylight Inn is, as you say, goes back in time, and also the modern Joneses are kind of interesting too. What is it about the way they cook barbecue that sets it apart from?
What I found, whether in Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, even Brooklyn, New York, whole hog is whole hog. So it's generally the pits look the same, cinder block pits about waist high, with some sort of grill or bar or rebar, kind of able to withstand the weight of a hog, of a 150 to 200 pound hog. Some of these pit houses that these pits are in are low ceilinged and fill up with smoke. Some, like Ricky Parker's, are almost cathedral in height. And what interested me in Aiden was, besides being cousins, the Skylight Inn and Bum's Restaurant have kind of two threads that connect them. One is that both of them really promote a mythology of themselves. They really tie themselves to history. They tie themselves to the history of the town and the region. And there's a famous story that the Skylight Inn and the family members, the Jones family that runs that restaurant, like to tell. Their restaurant was founded eight decades ago by Pete Jones, and Pete Jones liked to tell a story about the time in the 1970s when two reporters from National Geographic showed up at his door, and they had been searching for the best barbecue in North Carolina. They were traveling across country, a photographer and a writer. They were producing a book for the magazine for National Geographic, in North Carolina, of course, you search out barbecue, and they were searching for the best whole hog barbecue. They find their way to Skylight Inn, and as the story goes in the Jones family, these reporters showed up at the door, and they order up a barbecue sandwich, and upon leaving, they tell Mr. Jones that this is the best barbecue they have ever eaten in their life, and they went beyond that and said, this is the capital of barbecue. After that, Pete Jones built the famous Capitol Dome that towers over his restaurant, which is, I think, the most beautiful accoutrement on any in any barbecue restaurant, or maybe any restaurant in the country. I think it's so fantastic, this silvery dome that catches the light. It's beautiful. But I went back and tracked down the book those reporters had written. And in that book, they talk about the first time they went to the Skylight Inn, and they say they asked at gas stations in the region, where do we eat barbecue? They were pointed that way, and they show up, and Pete Jones welcomes them, and he says, boys, you have found the capital of barbecue, the best barbecue in the world. And he presents them with a T-shirt that says exactly that. And so the way Pete Jones kind of co-opted that story is, he said, he flipped it around. He said that National Geographic, one of the most famous magazines in the world, declared his barbecue to be the best, declared Skylight to be the capital. In fact, he had done it who knows how long before.
He'd put words.
I really love that kind of, that story, that myth-making. I think it's a wonderful story, and it's built into the identity of the restaurant.
Well, you talk about the way that it looks, it's outside looks like the Capitol, or looks like a Capitol, but you also had told a story about how the Skylight got its name. Do you remember that in your book?
Right. So as Pete Jones, he was a teenager at the time. He was building the Skylight by hand, and this was a rural community. There was a biplane buzzing overhead, and he had not finished constructing the roof, so there was some kind of open roof, open air ceiling on the restaurant, which hadn't opened yet, and the plane touches down and says, "Wow, it looks like you put some skylights in there."
Is that really right?
I'd like to think you're right. I mean, I cannot think in the family. There's no other kind of answer to where that restaurant could have gotten its name. The interesting thing is when you go to Aden and you ask for directions, if you ask any local for directions to the Skylight Inn, they pause as if never have heard of that name before, the Skylight Inn, and they will offer you directions to quote-unquote Pete Jones's Barbecue or Pete Barbecue. Everyone there calls it Pete Jones's Barbecue. The Skylight Inn, although it's on the building, it's on the menu, it's in the literature, the website is skylightinbarbecue.com, it's Pete Jones Barbecue. That is its name.
For those people who live in Chapel Hill are used to eating pork shoulders, why would the whole hog and the, you know, the, it's, well, let me just, let me make an analogy to chicken in my family. I like the dark meat. My wife likes the white meat, but she had the choice. She would just buy chicken breast and say, that's the best part of the chicken. I would say she's missing out on a lot of it. Is it sort of the same way with hogs, that you're missing some of the best parts of the pig to eat if you just concentrate on shoulders or butts or something like that? What is it about whole hog barbecue that really makes it so good?
Well, I think that's right. I think the whole hog offers every bit of the pig. I mean, that's whole hog. And a place like Skylight will chop up the white, the dark, will add some crispy skin in there. So you're getting kind of every bite of the hog all in one fork or spoonful. Other places around the country will actually allow you to, and this is a bit rare, but will allow you to actually pick which part of the hog you want. So you can basically kind of order up anything. You can say, I want a bit of the fatty bacon. You can order up some shoulder meat. You can mix those two together. You can have some skin added. That really, it's kind of like a pick and pull, kind of like the pig picking tradition in South Carolina, but that they'll do that, you know, on the other side of the glass window. And then there is the South Carolina pig picking, where you do that yourself at, say, a buffet bar or a tailgate, where the pig is splayed out in front of you, the cooked hog, and you get to, with a fork or with some pincers, you get to grab whatever you want from the animal. I think that's what makes hog so interesting. It isn't what immediately attracted me. I liked the opportunity to see these different kinds of meats with different flavor profiles, different textures. But what immediately attracted me was kind of the immensity of the enterprise there's fire, there's smoke. You get that with a lot of barbecue cultures. But not at this size. A 200-pound animal takes a lot of manpower. It takes a lot of manpower to cart to the pit, to flip. All hogs need flipping towards the end of its cooking time. There's a real violence to this work because hogs are so full of fat and grease, they often explode or cause the pits to burn. And every pitmaster I know has lost his pit house, every whole hog pit master, from fire, from the hog fat, which burns kind of hot and fast like napalm, a lot of bread ass.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Ryan Fertel, and we're talking about his new book, The One True Barbecue, Fire, Smoke, and the pit masters who cook the whole hog. Ryan and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Ryan Fertel. He's got a new book called The One True Barbecue, Fire Smoke, and the Pit Masters Who Cook the Whole Hog. And before the break, we were talking about one of the most famous in North Carolina, maybe famous in the country, barbecue places where they do cook the whole hog. And the family that runs it is still the same family that made it famous, I guess. But it's not the same as it was. Pete's not running it anymore. Pete Jones is not running it anymore. Is it his son and his nephew, Bruce and Jeff, who are in charge?
His two sons, Bruce and Jeff, and then Bruce's son, Sam Jones.
Gotcha, okay.
Who has become the face of the Skylight and who just opened his own place in Greenville, Winterville, called Sam Jones's Barbecue, and he does whole hog.
And so is it separate, or are they? I mean, this, you know, I've seen so many great barbecue places when they start having second sites and branches and franchise and all that, it corrupts the whole thing. Is this happening in Aiden and Greenville and Winterville?
As I understand it, talking to Sam, I have not been to Sam Jones's Barbecue yet. I'll be there very soon. But Sam is managing both places, and then he owns the restaurant with his name on it.
Gotcha. So,
but they are very different animals. Skylight Inn remains a place where you order what Skylight Inn is famous for. So that's chopped barbecue, a slice of cornbread, and coleslaw. That's it. I mean, they sell chicken on the weekends, and they sell banana pudding now. That's been the menu for forever, and I think that will always be the menu. Sam Jones's has a full menu. It's a kind of a full service restaurant. They have hamburgers. They offer other barbecued items. They might even have salads. They have a full bar, I know. Similar and very, very different at the same time.
What's going on down the street in Aiden at the restaurant that we know as Bum's Restaurant?
Right. So Bum's Restaurant, which is one of my favorite stories along the kind of my whole hog adventures. As I said before, Skylight Inn and Bum's Restaurant are related. They are family. And the Joneses trace their barbecue lineage, their barbecue family tree back to the Dennis family. And it is the Dennis family, Bum Dennis and his son Larry Dennis, that run Bum's Barbecue, Bum's Restaurant, I should say, which is in downtown Aiden, kind of in the square of the town. When you walk into Bum's, there's a set of pamphlets by the door, and so I grabbed one of these pamphlets, and it's called The History of Bum's Restaurant and the Dennis Family. And in that pamphlet, just like the Skylight Inn, they kind of tie themselves to history using, I think, a great deal of myth-making, fun myth-making, myth-making that certainly is rooted in history, but something you can also poke some holes in. For instance, they trace the Dennis family back to a man, an outlaw, a ruthless fellow they describe him as, named Otter Dennis, but Otter like the animal, and they say Otter relocated to this part of North Carolina because he was on the run from the law. The details are kind of sketchy. And that he probably, likely started cooking barbecue in the very low-lying swamp of Aiden in eastern North Carolina. Aiden at that time, it was not Aiden. It was a town of outlaws, they say, the family says. And when it came time to name the town, when people started erecting homes, buildings in the downtown, and it came time to pick a name, they chose Aiden, as in a den of iniquity, a den of thieves.
Well,
which is hilarious. So Otter then kind of started this lineage, this line of barbecue pit masters, according to the Dennis family in their pamphlet, down the line until today. So about 120, 150 years of pitmasters. Again, details are very, very sketchy.
What about just for those of us who want to go and enjoy a good barbecue treat? Mm-hmm. Is there any difference about what we would get at Bun's versus what we get at the Skylight Inn? Is it full menu at Bun's? You said it's fairly
good. I love the Skylight Inn, and I equally love Bum's, and I have a great affection for Bum and Larry Dennis. They offer a full menu, they offer three meals a day. They do a breakfast. And they do a lunch and an early dinner with whole hog barbecue at its center. They also do fried chicken. They do other meats. And I really, really love their range of vegetables. They do greens. They do beans. They have wonderful cornbread. They have a sweet potato cornbread that is really amazing. And then they have corn sticks. They have, my favorite is a rutabaga that Larry Dennis makes, which comes out, we don't eat rutabaga where I'm from down in southern Louisiana, and it comes out kind of, it's pink in color, and it's mashed rutabaga, it's pink, and it's sweet. It's such an amazing alternative to your ordinary mashed potato. I love going to Bum's. I think I've spent more time at Bum's than any other restaurant. I think that's a good guess, and I love going there and drinking coffee throughout the morning. It's one of those places where the men from town, many of them of retirement age, show up at 5 and 6 in the morning and drink coffee till 8 or 9, leave, come back for lunch, and maybe come back a third time for dinner.
It's my kind of place. I'm going to take a break right now and run down there. But after the break, we're going to talk about some of the other great barbecue places in the Carolinas. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Ryan Fertel. We're talking about his book, The One True Barbecue. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Ryan Fertel, who's got a new book, The One True Barbecue. We're talking, and he's got a subtitle that emphasizes that it's a lot about the people who run the pits, the hard-working people who do that. One of the places where Chapel Hill people are familiar with, because they, on some of them, when they're going to the beach, will stop by a place called Wilbur, or it's known as Wilbur's. And you tell us in your book about Wilbur's. It qualifies as a whole hog cooked over wood coals, and it's pretty good, and it's got a good business. What is it that's special about Wilbur's?
So I've done a lot of food writing, food journalism, and I think one of the problems that food journalists run to is when they have to go interview someone, talk to someone, they make a call or they visit a restaurant, they talk to the person whose name is on the door, whose name adorns the menu. And I decided to try something different at Wilbur's. I did eat at Wilbur's several times. And one night I walked after dinner service, I walked behind the pit and met a very interesting man named Keith Ward. He goes by the name of Pop. Everyone calls him Pop. And I immediately felt kind of a connection to Pop. He invited me to come back the next day and spend some time with him at the pit. I ended up staying the whole night with him at the pit, and all morning, cooking a set of hogs. And Pop really opened up and allowed me to kind of open my mind to kind of the realities of whole hog. Pop has been working at Wilbur's for several decades. His father, who I believe is in his 80s now, has worked even longer, has worked since the very beginning of Wilbur's. And in my last conversation with them, was still working one day a week in his 80s. My conversations with Pop offered me a way to look at kind of the divide that exists in barbecue, and not just barbecue, but a lot of businesses, a lot of restaurant cultures, and not just in North Carolina, but across the country. And that's that a lot of the labor is is African-American or is other minorities across the country, and the owners are white. And so Pop and I talked about race and kind of his place as a black man with little opportunities growing up in Goldsboro, North Carolina. Pop was very aware of the long tradition of black-owned barbecue restaurants in North Carolina, going back to the very first decade of the 1900s. A man named Adam Scott, a black man, was the most famous barbecue pitmaster in the country. He cooked for the wealthiest businessmen, tobacco entrepreneurs in the state. He cooked for a president. He had an empire, and that empire still exists. Somewhat, you can buy a sauce made by one of his family members, but those opportunities no longer exist for a man like Pop. Pop is he's labor, and his life is defined by the labor he does in the pit. It is immensely difficult, backbreaking labor. It's hauling these pigs, sitting up all night long with them. In a smoke-fueled room, a smoke-filled room, it felt dangerous. It felt and not Wilbur's. A lot of these places. It felt like Pop, was working something that might not have been the best for his health. And unfortunately, a lot of pitmasters do die young. They do. Come down with emphysema and other lung diseases. Many of them are cigarette smokers also, which does not help things. And I really saw that reality in my night and several other times I've been to visit Pop.
Well, is it unfair, an unfair situation? Or do you just see this as a mirror of the way things work in America all over the place?
I think it is the way things work in America. I don't think it's unfair. If it was unfair, I mean, Pop's a smart guy. If it was unfair, he would leave. He did inherit the shovel from his father. Other family members have worked there. He has family members that have other jobs in the county. So it's not unfair. It's just the reality of the world and of America. I grew up in a restaurant, in a steakhouse, where the work in the kitchen was done by mostly African Americans. Most of the front of the house, not all of it, was white. That was the reality of the situation, and it was run by that restaurant was run by my mother, and I would never think of my mother as racist or challenge her with any of that, but it was just the reality of kind of the workforce and how restaurants look in the South and across the country. I'd say the kitchen labor, waiting tables is incredibly hard work. The kitchen labor, I think, always had it tougher. They came out with burns. They came out with scalds. They came out of their shift with cuts. And what I saw with Pop, his body and the bodies of many pitmasters, many who own their restaurants too, come out racked, beaten, kind of scarred. It is intense, intense, violent work that they do.
Well, Ryan Fertil, I could listen to you talk all day long, but we're out of time. And I want to thank you for your book and for sharing some of it with us. This matter of race, in your book, you talk about a guy who's famous here, about Ed Mitchell, who seemed to have worked his way out of the pits into the social life of North Carolina. It didn't work out. And then you also write down in South Carolina about this racist guy. What's his name? Behringer?
Bessinger.
Bessinger still flies, or left the surf, still flying the Confederate flag over his restaurants.
Oh, well, they took it down. They took it down right before he passed away.
Is that right? Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry. But in any event, your book is a great cultural study and prompts us to want to learn more about what's going on in our state. You shame us by coming all the way up from Louisiana, taking us to eastern North Carolina, and telling us that we're missing something by not going to those great places. Thanks a lot, and good luck. We're glad you're going to be that you've sold your book in our local bookstores and visited us, and look forward to having you come back a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Ryan Fertel. Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.